review process will have implications on broader evaluation, sorry, broader amendments of the entire organization. And therefore, we are engaging the GBE legal team to say what would be the implications of having all the things that we may want to amend within the organization outside the Bella process. Second program, Chair, is on professional registration. And that's the area that I said we need to make sure that in registering our educators, but also lecturers, we, against all odds, make sure that they are fit to practice from a qualification point of view, but also from conduct point of view. And hence, the issue of screening them through SAPS, but also recently working very closely with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in terms of your sexual offenders register. We've got two programs here. There are two indicators on program 2.1. One is on the number of educators registered and also percentage of educators applying through online system for professional registration. Again, in moving with the fourth industrial revolution and making sure we service as many educators as possible, we've got the online registration that we are encouraging teachers to do more and more to move towards that. But knowing that our educators and people are more physical, it's taking slow for them to adjust to that. And in terms of program 2.2, it's more about registering student teachers. And therefore, we are looking at the issue of piloting that area and also looking at registering student teachers from year one. And therefore, slowly we need to be making sure that we ease the higher education institutions into this and also the student teachers there. Again, these are your targets for, I think we need this slide, I can see. It's still the same as that one. So also in terms of issues of registration, we're just highlighting the challenges that we had in 2020-21 as a result of COVID-19, and you see the impact of these challenges on the numbers that we produced. Even though we had these challenges, we managed to work collaboratively with the employers in all the provinces, but also with higher education institutions so that we can deal with the issue of making sure that the educators who are, or the applicants are well assisted. As a result of COVID-19 and the impact and number of people that came to register, you can see that the trend from 2018-19, 2020, we had a huge number here. However, because of COVID, we lost approximately 19,000 educators who did not come to register. You can also see in terms of the trends across the quarters that the first quarter and second quarter, because it was the time of the hardcore national lockdown, you had very few educators coming in, and the bulk of them came towards the last quarter early this year, when we were going to level one. Third program, Chair, is on ethical standards, which is more about making sure that educators adhere to the code of professional ethics. Like, again, for programs, one, in terms of investigation, we're looking at the cases that were reported within the financial year. It will be within the 2020-2021. However, the issue that we reported of the rollover cases, we said we do not want to leave them alone. And therefore, simultaneously, we also bring in the cases that were left behind as a result of the numbers that we couldn't finish within a particular year. So we carry all of them at the same time. The same applies to the disciplinary hearings in terms of the second program. We do the same in terms of hearings for the particular financial year, but hearings on the cases that were reported previously and were rolled over. In terms of the third sub program on sanctions, we are saying we're tracking number of monitoring reports produced on sanctioned educators. Remember, this is the area where we're having challenges to say sometimes we sanction them as they, however you find them in another province or in another sector or in another school where they jump from one province to the other. These are the quarterly targets. You will note them. Again, we are highlighting here the top 10 cases from the data that we analyzed in 2020-2021. You can see the issue of corporal punishment as well as sexual misconduct. If you just take the first two, are continuing to be on the rise, and it's one area that we are looking at. And as a result, council is prioritizing this area because it's affecting our learners even more from an emotional, psychological point of view. But also the issue of assault is being taken care of seriously. And I think you have read a whole lot of cases in the last week or so that. And we're also showing sexual misconduct cases over 5 years period. There's an increase as we go along, which we need to be focused on. And we are also saying, even in the previous financial year, even when you thought you had lockdown, these things would not happen, you still continue to have this number of cases. We are indicating to you also the sanctions, the kind of sanctions that we meted out, so that you can have an idea of what is it that is happening, where are the areas of concern, but also which provinces did we get most of those issues. These are the people that were fined, but also some of them were removed from the register with certain conditions. We had 11 educators that we track off completely, but again, know where minors are involved, we must also report to the Department of Social Development. And all these people were reported there so that they would never be able to work with children again in any form in the country, but also even if they go outside the country, they can be banned. The challenges around program three, we just highlighting them here and flagging them again. I'm not going to go through them. And program four is on continuing professional teacher development. Professional development, again, this is the program that I indicated is being funded through the through PISCAS as part of the DBE Land Function Advisors. The first sub-program is on the CCTV system itself, and we have a percentage of selected practicing educators that we continue to support across the entire country so that we can use this from a research perspective to understand some of the things that are impacting, factors that are impacting on educators not to be participating in continuing professional development, and others, why are they doing well, and whether is there any correlation between continuing professional development that they are participating in and their results or learner outcomes or the results that are announced by the minister. Again, we're signing up the final year students so that when they become newly qualified educators, they are orientated and familiar with the system. So that's why we are tracking this as well. The second area is on number of educators supported on professional mentors. These are the professional areas like your professional code of professional ethics, your teacher's rights, a whole lot of areas that are professional and not necessarily your core curriculum issues. And therefore, we're looking at those numbers that are highlighted there. The third area is on quality management. It's speaking to the approval of programs that are participated, that teachers participate in. So the approval of providers, but also the endorsement of programs that educators are participating in. While we approve on paper, But the third indicator is saying we also need to go where educators are so that we can see the relationship between what you submitted as a provider, the program, and also the implementation on the ground. This we are showing the quarterly indicators on all the quarterly targets on all the, and also some of the issues that we want the portfolio committee to note in terms of that particular program, and also the impact of COVID-19 in terms of the face-to-face that we used to have with our educators, and more we've introduced a whole lot of webinars so that our educators can begin to be assisted and supported through that. However, the issue as always will be access to data, access to connectivity, especially in remote rural areas, that we are looking at a whole lot of strategies like reverse feeding systems and all that to make sure that we accommodate, especially those that are. Program 5 is on professional teaching standards. We've got three sub-programs. The program is divided into three sub-programs. First one is initial teacher education, which is more about developing policies and frameworks that will assist us in beginning to register student teachers from year one, but also in beginning to say to the public, these are some of the things or criteria that you want to see if you are or you are interested or aspiring to be a professional educator. Second area is on newly qualified educators. Again, we are flagging the indicators which are more about working with the department in terms of linking their induction with our professional certification, and we are working on the policies and frameworks and processes and systems in terms of how to that one. And the last one is on practicing educators in terms of making sure of their lifelong learning and the extent at which we can begin to look into the re-registration process around that. Again, these are program points. I guess the last one to share before I hand over to the CFO is program 6, which I indicated we separated from program 1 so that we can do specific unit issues of research, but also analysis of data and making sure that for the reading information or reading profession in the country. We have three sub-programs. Number one is the number of research reports that we will be producing. You can see the targets here, is three. And number of statistical reports to be produced on the status of the teaching profession so that you can begin to inform your teacher supply, demand and utilization, but also advise the minister a lot of other areas around the teaching profession. The third sub-program is the dissemination of research, because doing research and not disseminating it or not making it available for decision making, for advisory purposes, it's not having it. So we'll be using the reports that we have to deal with the dissemination, but also we are working on a space journal and magazine that will be produced on the basis of the work that is done, also on the basis of the practitioner-based research in the country. Sub-program, the last one is on space virtual library that we just launched. It's now functioning. However, we need to monitor and track the percentage of visits by educators to the virtual library. And in terms of that virtual library, it's accessible to the educators, but also to the three stakeholders and also provincial departments of education. And we are also indicating in terms of 50,000 free titles, anyone else can be in a position to log into it and be able to access the material, and teachers will be able to use it for classroom practice, material for their leadership and management and a whole lot of other issues, including research. And this is the link that you will be using to access. And lastly, Chair, we just indicating the teacher safety security in school project that we had. We've been reporting to you about it throughout the last two financial years. The research was done, the teacher's voice was there in terms of the focus group sessions, the roundtable. And now we are proud to announce that we have the handbook, which is in your memory sticks. You'll be able to access it later on. The next step for it is for it to be advocated. And like I said, we started the process, the campaigns and all that. It has been in the media during this month, and we are continuing. We are developing facilitators' guides so that it can be utilized by anyone who wants to use it. We will be running a program to capacitate educators through webinars and workshops through Program 4, which has got a sub-program on teacher support. And this is one of the areas that we use to deal with that. And we are also developing an online material program on that so that those that want to use it as a self-study material can be in a position to do that. And yeah, that is that for the APP. And now we are moving to the CFO in terms of the resources. Maybe I'm some explanation. Yeah, you can take over here.
No, thanks. In terms of our financial resources, one would like to indicate that since 2017 November, we have remained constant after the council had reviewed its membership fee at that time, which is the main source of funding fees, while the other fees which are administrative costs, such as registration, remain constant as well. You will realize that over the MTF period, our revenue, anyway, remained at constant level. You will observe the reduction of some budget line items, which are due to the rising fixed costs with the same stable revenue. But however, the councils have taken note and they have got a standing decision that every 3 years the funding or the state of funding of SAIL be reviewed. Currently, the council is in that process of reviewing its funding capacity to ensure that the council delivers its mandatory functions satisfactorily. Currently, it is busy. There is a process to counter the pressurizing economic situation. But however, this process is going a little bit slow because of the economic situation, which is severely affecting the same educators who are responsible for funding the council. What we have to do in the meantime, while the council is working on this tough issue of reviewing the funding, the council is also in the process of reprioritization and putting in place stringent cost control measures to ensure that we improve and sustain the delivery of safe mandatory functions given the circumstances where we find ourselves getting into. One would indicate that approval has been obtained in terms of the CPTD management system regarding the funding, where National Treasury has already approved the budget to fund that program. We have also have 5 provincial offices which have to operate from the same budget that we are presenting to you. One would like to indicate lastly that one of the offices which were supposed to start has started in Eastern Cape in October and it's operational. We had a slight delay in the Western Cape due to the acquisition of the administrative space, which just concluded now towards just the end of the financial year, and we'll be working in the preparation of that particular structure to ensure that we move in during this financial year to start operating. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that's the presentation. The budget plan from SAIS I've noted, Honorable Nodata, Honorable Mwaseta, Honorable Sukar, Honorable Adwans. Any other member from the visual platform? Is there a member that wants to...
Yeah, yes, Chair, put my name in.
I can Honorable who?
Honorable Christian.
Can I just get the member?
Chairperson.
Chabeleng.
And Honorable Christian.
Yes, Honorable Chabeleng. Christian.
Yes.
Okay, in that order, not other?
Thank you so much, Chair. I just have two parts that I want to ask questions on. I see that in terms of cases that SAIS has in terms of what they've resolved and what they've unresolved and what they aim to achieve is sitting between, you know, competing cases at 50%, some 60%, and the other target is 30%. I wanted to check how many cases are unresolved thus far, one. Number two, what is the effectiveness of the investigators of SAIS in dealing with such cases? You know, what have you found is the effectiveness, the success rate in terms of them dealing with the cases? Thirdly, is there a tracking and tracing mechanism across all provinces of those people that have been found guilty so that they don't jump from one province to the next? You know, do you have a mechanism in place for that? That's the first part of the question. The second one is around the, you know, the professional development. What is the backlog in terms of unregistered teachers, if you've got a figure of any sort? And number two, linked with that, what would be the minimum qualification that one must have to be a registered teacher? The reason why I asked this question is that I was doing oversight in the Western Cape, and one principal was saying that, you know, they can't appoint teachers that already are teachers, you know, in their school because they couldn't pass a basic test of maybe grade 9 if they're teaching math. So I wanted to ask, what mechanisms are you going to put in place when you talk about a professional or professional registering for teachers? Are you going to quality test them in a certain way, as I've seen in your program, which program it is, but it's about professional development. Are you going to quality test them? Is there going to be a mechanism in place to be able to test the quality of those particular teachers? Because you're asked to write the same exam that you're going to teach, and in some cases, you know, teachers, you know, have failed it. If you can maybe guide on those ones. And then the last one, Chair, is this the accessibility of SAIS, right? Are you across all 9 provinces? How does one access SAIS? And do you have offices across the board or is it just here? Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mwaseta.
What's happening, Chairperson? My neighbor or who is okay, thank you. One thing I'm
convinced of it, but it was not me. Jefferson, thank you, and thank you very much. You see, they normally say the chickens have come home to roast. This used to be my second home, apart from where I was working for the major almost more than 10 years. Thank you. Because of course my approach. You see, at the beginning it was never stated where the toilets are. No, the toilets are on the, your turn left, you'll find them on the green and let's welcome Jefferson. Let's welcome and applaud this well-oiled report and the presentation from the preamble set by the chair and then Obabacele and the presentation from the CEO, of course, coupled by the financial report from the CFO on how their finances are running. And you see, sometimes we must give credit where credit is due. The layout is excellent, Jefferson. You see, it must go on record. You don't have to say, sit here and leave another chair and go forward to keep social distancing. It is just, you see, the next chair just, it socializes you in a decent way. It must be commendable. You see, these are some of the legacies which some of us left behind here. One of your mandates, CFO. Therefore, one of your mandate is on the ethical standards and promoting and maintenance of the ethical standards in the profession. And for you to successfully accomplish that, to be honest, somewhere, of course, you have made mention of it, you must go out to investigate and some disciplinary hearing, set out for some disciplinary hearing. And that, given that as per your mandate, sometimes it's important to know, to be exposed, how were you able to accomplish that during the heightened stage of COVID-19? Because definitely you were at work despite the waves that came and gone. And the same, of course, could be applicable to the registration of both educators and lecturers. On this second one, which I'm making mention of the registration, were you ever able to go zoom into the issue of online registrations? And if so, how effective was this able to work for you? And the fourth point I want to indicate is specifically in our own challenges. All programs as presented appear to have been negatively affected, especially as a result of COVID-19 pandemic. And hence, you kept on indicating that the challenges we encountered are these, challenges we encountered are these. The truth is COVID-19 waves exposed us to a list of a number of challenges. But out of those challenges, you see, in life, even in a normal life, what is very important is when we say a person has been successful, is when you reach a point where you have got enough challenges or you meet challenges, but your ability to turn those challenges into your strength, that's when we say you have accomplished what you call. Hence, I would love to indicate that, you see, we are from Umalusi, and I cited an example of what actually happened in the Department of Basic Education. 27 years into our democracy, Jefferson, we were walking at our own pace, but when the pandemic hit us, all of us woke up and we realized the magnitude of inequalities in this country, South Africa, that we had. other schools continued to run through digital learnings. When the deep rural schools suffered dismally, you cannot even talk of that because they did not have the smart phones, they did not even have the network. It was just a very serious thing. But what became even worse is the infrastructure level, the provision of water and sanitation, let alone even the provision of human resource. Because you see, the whole issue of human resource was exposed when we realized that almost more than half of the teachers were teachers continuing to work, but with very serious comorbidities. And now when all of them took leave, the schools were left skeletal and naked. So now, the question I would love to pose is, based on the, of course, let us agree, based on the espoused challenges following the impact of COVID-19, how have you as an entity succeeded in converting some of those challenges into your strength? So Kwasiri, in every darkest cloud, there is a silver lining. How did you find the silver lining throughout the impact and the effects of COVID-19 as in your operation? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just have three questions. I just need to ask if I could get clarity on why the space sections has been removed from the ballot law, and when will the process of making amendments to the space act begin, and will the process start from scratch? And then secondly, what plans are you making to accommodate the move from ECD from DFD to the DBE? And then many ECD practitioners lack formal qualifications, but they have extensive experience. So what accreditation for prior learning and or grandfathering concessions will be made? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the straightforward presentation that you received and the good work that has been done by SAIS under this difficult conditions and the pandemic that we are still faced with. Chair, I have about two questions. Under Program 3, it is a known fact that South Africa were facing another pandemic of gender-based violence in our society, and sexual misconduct in schools is a very serious challenge. My question there is, how many cases does the entity investigate on sexual misconduct in a financial year, and how many cases are rolled over? How many disciplinary hearings on sexual misconduct are finalized in a financial year, and how many are rolled over also? What can the entity enhance to address misconduct on, assault and sexual harassment, which is high? And also from the work that the entity has done, do all schools have sexual harassment policy? And okay, the other one was on the issue of the Bella Bill. I think I will also hear you respond on that one. And another question is on the budget they received. You see there's a slightly increased allocation way below inflation, and in real terms, what is the impact of the low allocation on the mandate of your entity? And lastly, it's on the ECD migration from social development to DBE. What is the role of SAIS in that regard? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to check if there is any role that the state is playing in what Umalusi gave a report about the two new the general education and training certificates for adults, GEDCA and the NASCA. Are there standards in terms of who qualifies to teach at this and what are the levels? And what role are they playing in advising the department and including Umalusi on those? Most of the questions were asked by the members. But I just want to check, are there cases that are recurring where you get a teacher or an educator being charged for misconduct and then they'll do the same thing again after a year or two? You know, and the other I'd like to know is that what cases qualify to be dealt with internally and what cases are being referred to law enforcement agencies? That's what I want to check. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to SACE for the presentation. My question is about the backlog of teacher registrations. it was mentioned earlier that there are a number of provinces who have offices, but the provinces weren't mentioned to us. Now, it is, a few teachers have sent a written letter to me requesting to communicate with SACE because of the backlog of teacher registrations, because SACE does not communicate with them as to how far the process is, with the result that by the time they make communication with SACE, the time period has lapsed. Some of them have even paid for initial registrations twice or three times, and SACE has not communicated adequately with them unless they communicate with SACE as to how far the process is. So I would like to know if there is any way that SACE can communicate as to the progress of each and every registration to the applicant to make sure that the time period has not lapsed for that application. And also then I would like to know by SACE which are the provinces that still do not have walk-in offices. The other question is about the professional development of educators. Now, I know it's probably a DBE question to be asked, but I would like to know what SACE's thoughts would be on that. Seeing that we sometimes battle to get teachers to improve their qualifications, they don't have the urge or the motivation to improve their qualifications. Now, what are the thoughts on incentivizing professional teachers in improvement in their qualifications? What is SACE's thoughts on that? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Is there any other member on the virtual platform? Let me know what you use, Chair Keller, to lead the responses.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the questions raised are of technical and operational nature, and we request the CEO and the CFO to respond to some of the questions. However, if there is a need, we'll have to come in as councillors, members of ESCO, to add all the responses from the CFO and the CEO. CEO?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me maybe just start from the last one with Honorable. The issue of linking salary increments with
teaching qualification. And I think Ms. Hoffmeister can also come in from the department side. Has been an issue that has been debated quite at a greater length in the chamber, and also my councillors can come in, which is the Education Labor Relations Council. And I think from that we then moved to something that was called at that time broadbanding, and with time you moved to the OSD, yes. So currently we don't have that mechanism. Unless you get a qualification from the employer side, then you get a once-off sort of incentive. It's something that can be discussed through the employers and also through the chamber, but trade doesn't have direct mandate on that particular area. Again, you be aware that there's also been a teacher development summit in 2009 that also recommended, in terms of its declaration, the whole issue of separating performance appraisal IQMS from the one for incentivizing teachers monetary wise from the one that was dealing with the summative aspect. So those issues, we are debating them, and I think the question came at an opportune time because we are going to the teacher summit, teacher development summit as the sector, and maybe those are the issues that we can begin to discuss at that particular level. But currently, I wouldn't have any direct answer to provide with regard to that, except that we've got a historical issue on the matter, and we'll continue to discuss it as we go along. The province, state has got 5 provincial offices, which is in Limpopo, the Eastern Cape, the Western Cape, Free State, and KZN. Council, in the next coming 5 years, as part of its strategic plan, will look into the remaining provinces and also keep taking into account the economic situation of the country. So the ones that are not having the provincial offices are your Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest. The issue of registration, and I think from the Honorable Christian, from the presentation, we highlighted the challenges that we had as a result of COVID-19, especially during the first 2 quarters. The first 6 months of the year when we were really, really experiencing hard lockdown. And I think you would have seen from the numbers that from the second part of the financial year, the numbers increased exponentially, and therefore the issues of backlog, yes, they were there at the beginning, but at the moment we tried as much as possible to clear them 100%. The issue of the labs, it's more of, I think they were speaking about provisional registration that would last if you were provisionally registered and you became a newly qualified educator, and therefore you needed to move from updating your status of provisional to full registration. Hence I said currently we don't have that backlog, but we're trying as much as possible with the new normal to make sure that we are putting systems in place to deal with the issues that you've raised. Perhaps we may want to also follow this matter up with yourself just to get the names of those educators and also to understand the circumstances at which they were not 100% satisfied with the service, and will be willing to follow up and make sure that we address the issues accordingly. Honorable Sabeleng, I did not get the Umalusi issue properly. However, you raised an issue around what is this role in terms of advising the Department of Basic Education. The same act is very clear in terms of Section 5B to say we need to be playing an advisory role to the minister in terms of professional matters, because we have professional counsel, but also generally in terms of other education-related matters. And what I can indicate is that the reason why we separated the research program, one of the areas was to say we need to make sure that we've got data available and proper evidence that we'll be using to advise the minister accordingly. So our role is advisory, particularly to the Minister of Basic Education, however, also to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, because we deal with initial teacher education matters. Recurring cases, what cases are being dealt with by says, that is why I'm saying maybe at a later stage you can request Honorable Chavilin to repeat the question that we did not get clearly at the beginning. The role of SAIS in the ECD migration, Honorable Ayer, and I think the same issue was raised by Honorable Sukes. Currently, just to indicate that SAIS is registering the ECD educators at NQF level 4 provisionally as they move to NQF level 5. So they get registration, but also those that are having diploma in grade are teaching. So we are already in that stage in terms of the registration process. And one of the other things that we said as we are professionalizing the entire education space and the teaching profession, we are also wanting to professionalize the ECD. And therefore, what council did was to take a resolution that we established a specific committee, ad hoc committee, that will report to the Professional Development Committee and Executive and Council to be working closely with the DBE in terms of the migration issue. And also, I've been engaging DDG Simone Geyer, who's responsible for ECD, to say, while you are dealing with the migration issues from government level in terms of waiting for the president to be declaring those issues, we need to start working on issues around qualifications, which the Department of Higher Education and Training is already having the framework. However, the framework is not friendly, like you said, in terms of those educators that have already been, the ECD practitioners that have already been on the field. To what an extent can we RPL them and take into account the issues? So those are the issues from our side as part of professionalizing the sector and making sure that we accommodate them and understand that currently the articulation of qualifications at SAQA level, but also from the DHT level, is not accommodating me who's running an ECD center at NTF level 4 or 5 and all that. And the majority of those people will never ever even go to that level. So to what an extent are we in the days leading to the whole issue of migration beginning to deal with those issues? Even more, you need to bring in the Education Labor Relations Council, because you've got the remuneration issues, conditions of service that should be working, we should be working together, and also the curriculum of training if we are to train from the Department of Basic Education sector. So that's where we are in terms of working that. Council received report from the ECD ad hoc team, and we are having ongoing relations and ongoing, just on the 17th, I'm meeting with the DDG just to say where are we, what are some of the things can we start to unpack and move. And also look into articulation issues, because if you don't deal with those issues, you are perpetuating the discrimination issues. You are saying the higher education space and the qualifications that are there are meant for certain people and not others. So yeah, those are the issues around ECD that I've already touched. Then based on other issues, Honorable Adjuns, on gender-based violence, yes, you are correct. And like I always say to the committee, this issue of gender-based violence, and you can even see from the society, it's it's way, way, way big, and that is why the president is saying it is a pandemic as well. And it's still starting into the schools. The issues of sexual misconduct cases, we can, on average, the ones that are reported, the annum, are around 100 on average. That's the reported. So that is why I showed in one slide to say, despite the fact that we had COVID-19 in last year, we still reduced about 58, which means these things are even happening even when we think people are not interacting and all that. So, and one of the things that council did in order for us not to roll over those and protect the children is to make sure that we prioritize them. So if you can even see from the slides that we're talking about strike off and also the sanctions, the bulk of them are sexual misconduct, because we prioritize them and make sure that children are not being disadvantaged. The other thing that we did, we established a formal trilateral between ourselves, ELRC, and also Department of Basic Education, so that we also prevent what Honorable Noda, that you raised earlier on in terms of what are we doing, what mechanisms are there to make sure that we trace and track the ones that have been sanctioned, struck off, so that they don't move to other areas. So the one thing as part of that trilateral is to make sure that once this has meted out a sanction, it must go to the 9 provinces. They must assist us in blocking them from PESA. So that if I go to Northwestern, or I'm teaching in Northwestern, I try to go to Mpumalanga, the PESA already can show us that you are blocked. However, the area that we still need to work on is the independent schooling center. Because they don't have PESA, they don't have a system of human resource that is common, like PESA, EMIS, and all that. So therefore, in terms of that, we always encourage them to be checking with us before they employ, but also checking with the DSG in terms of the child protection register, and also checking with DOJC in terms of your National Register of Sexual Offenders. Without those mechanisms, we'd not be able to care for them. The mechanisms are there, but they may have loopholes here and there, especially when it comes to your independent schooling center where we don't have a common system. But also, we do follow up just to check from the 9 provinces to say, to what an extent are we, the list that we've given you, have you implemented? I mean, we get invited to participate in HEDCOM and CEM. Even yesterday, we were reporting to CEM just to check if they are still in the CEM workshop, whether they are still following those processes. The sexual harassment policy, in terms of being available from the employer side across the schools, I wouldn't be 100% sure, but maybe I would request our DBE colleagues just to later on assist on this matter. And we'll be able to follow up and send Mr. Brown the exact numbers in terms of the threats that Honorable Adjuan requested. The issue of the Bella Bill, when the fifth administration handed over, the Minister of Basic Education Chair and the Minister of the then Minister of Higher Education and Training, Honorable Naledi Pandor, they went back and said to say, when we move the Department of Higher Education out of Department of Education and separated the two, there was no clear direction in terms of whether this must continue with the TVET sector and CET. And therefore, along the way, the Minister of Higher Education then said to the DBE Minister, SAIS must consider taking that mandate back, because the intention at some stage was to have a separate council for TVET sector that will be separate from the school. And therefore, we met just around the elections. and they hand it over to the new administration must then take this forward. In doing that, they then developed, they then amended the SAFE Act. However, in doing that, the one area that we questioned as basic education and also the schooling sector was that we can't have a situation where council is run 50-50 between the TVET colleges and also your schooling. Because you've got almost 460,000 schooling educators, and then within the college lecturers, there are about 12,000. We contested that. And as a result, along the way, then we also had a process of saying we're reviewing the entire thing. And if we allowed the Bella bill to continue as is, it would have meant that you're having 50-50 between Tibet college lecturers who are 12,000 and a half, almost half a million educators. And therefore, we requested the department to put that on hold and also take an opportunity to say, as we are reviewing state and its processes, maybe then we need to engage the state law advisors to say, let's deal with the process separately. So I'm addressing the question that was raised by Honorable Sikyams, and I think also it came up from yourself and Honorable Adjuan. But however, we will, as the legislators, will continue to update you in terms of the process that we'll be working with. Honorable Morasseta, you raised an issue around the challenges that we face around COVID-19. Indeed, when you have challenges, sometimes they become opportunities for you to get a wake-up call in terms of some of the issues that you haven't been doing. Yes, we do have an online SAFE registration system that is meant for first-time registrants, and we are working on the second phase in terms of the newly qualified educators that have got provisional registration system process, and then moving to a full registration status. And with regard to that, it made us to move even faster in terms of making sure that those processes are there. But also, we are integrating our systems from an ICT perspective so that they must speak to one another before we can even go outside to say, these are some of the things that we need to align with you as other organizations. But also part of that made us to say, how do we provide services to the educators? Because issues of connectivity, but also issues of access to data are a challenge. And therefore, we began a process of engaging the big companies, your Mnet, Vodacom and all that, who are part of the transversal tender from the National Treasury to say, how can we deal with zero-rated kind of access to the SAFE website, so that every time when educator access SAFE website, just like when you access your bank app, you don't pay anything. You can deal with it with or without data. And therefore, the zero rating for the website will be at that level. But the second part was to say, how do we do the reverse billing, which our finance manager together with our head for ethics are heading, so that when educators participate in a program, the bill doesn't go to them. Yes, they will do. So the bill, what is being built in terms of data comes back to SAFE for SAFE to be able to support the educators on that. The other area to make sure that we facilitate communication is to say, let's have either a 0800 number, which will be a toll-free, so that educators who want to engage with council do not have challenges with regard to that. So those are some of the silver lining, Councillor, sorry, Honourable Mohan said that, because he's sitting even while you. Honorable Murasa, with regard to those issues, and more educators are warming up towards the webinars. It has been a struggle. They are slowly coming on to understand that services must continue, and that's one way that we'll deal with it. And Honorable Nodada, you raised questions around the unresolved cases. In terms of the exact set, can I not commit myself now? And just like we will do with Councillor Adjoan's question, we send them through the Secretariat to make sure that we have correct information in terms of the unresolved. Yeah, sitting in this room, unlike in Parliament, you think? the effectiveness of investigations. We do have our internal staff that are investigators, but in addition, we have what we call panelists, because we believe in a peer review system, and those panelists are coming from the profession. Those are the ones that are dealing with our investigation. Yes, they are effective. However, to understand, if I'm defending a case as an educator, I will try all the tricks to bring in lawyers to be antagonistic, to find a way of delaying. So those are the issues that are making us not to finish the case instantaneously, because of you don't want not to err in the process of making sure that the procedure are followed accordingly, and that you are not found wanting on procedural issues, you are not found wanting on substantive issues. And also during the COVID-19, parents refused flatly to allow their children to testify because of COVID-19, but also because they were trying to protect them too. You know how they did not want them to even go to school. And it was even worse with the cases. So those are some of the challenges, but the effectiveness is there. I've responded to your issue and honorable adjunct in terms of tracking and tracing. The issue of how many teachers are unregistered. You're referring to in terms of the professional, honorable adjunct, in terms of the professional registration. You mean unregistered in the profession? Because currently you can't teach if you are not registered. And every time when a person comes to me and say, the teachers in particular school are saying SEC is not registered in them, and I say to them they are not supposed to be in the school in the first place. And then I deal with the other part of saying, why are they in the school? So I'm not even going there, because that's my lingo to say you can't be a teacher who is not registered in a school, because in the first place you are practicing illegally. So let's take you to the ethics division to deal with you from that perspective first. And also that is why, as part of Bella, the other area that we are bringing is to say, how do we criminalize this process from an employer perspective? Because currently with the SAFE Act, we don't have power to deal with the employer that are employing educators that are not registered. A minimum qualification for an educator is matric plus 4 years for you to get a full registration status. And the other issue that I want to re-emphasize, because I know when we are refusing to register these educators, I've seen most cases they run back and run to the portfolio committee to say SAFE is not registering us. If you do not have a professional qualification, which is either your BS, Bachelor of Education, or first degree or first diploma and PGCE, you are not a professional educator. You can have 4 honors degrees and 10 honors master's degrees. The bottom line is you are not a professional educator and will not register you. So that we clear this thing and we are professionalizing the sector. We are having professionally qualified teachers who are not able to get employment, and therefore there's no way that we can prioritize people that are not interested in becoming teachers. So the minimum is matric plus 4 years for you to be a qualified educator. However, let me also indicate that we are supporting the three-stream model. We are supporting the policy on focus schools. Therefore, those people that will never ever be teachers, however we need them in schools, like your artisans and others, we give them special conditional registration. they won't teach anything else except that particular area that we are giving them registration to. The issue of teacher professionalization that you are talking about, whether we'll test the teachers or not, I think we took a decision as a profession to say we're not going to operate like your SAICA, which is your status accountant, your lawyers, that who are going to the bar, and before they can be advocates and whatever, there's a test that they write. So what we are doing, we're working closely with the Department of Basic Education to say employers must develop induction program, which is mandatory. When we are done, it will be mandatory for 1 year. They will participate in that 1 year mandatory, just like when the lawyers go and do articles in a law firm. They will go and do that, and on the basis of the quarterly, not submitting, the quarterly developmental project process that is recorded in the professional development portfolio is done, we will then say we accord or award full registration on the basis of that. And in addition to that, when I was mentioning SAPA in terms of the NQFX, the other area that we will be introducing that I've always reported in the committee is that on the basis of that induction as well, and any other thing that you may request, you may choose to want to be a certified educator over and above all those other things that you will have done. However, we need to make it clear that being a certified educator, just like being a chartered accountant or an advocate, should be a choice of an individual educator. But the induction will be mandatory so that you learn the ropes of the profession before you can be certified as a full professional registrant. Access to the state provinces, I think I've responded to that in terms of the number of provinces. CFO, you can respond on the finance one and we can back to the chapter. Thank you.
Thank you. The question which was raised was regarding the budget to say if you get low allocation, what will be the impact to the mandate? Let me start by saying that SAICE is funded by its own members who are educators, and the revenue, which is mainly the membership fee, is determined from time to time by council. So it determines it once, then it monitors it, then it sits down and determines and review it. So should the review take longer, then the council, or the operation of council, will pressurize in terms of the resources. And what will happen, the rising costs or fixed costs will catch up with us, whereby you cannot avoid paying salaries, cannot avoid paying municipalities. Those are fixed costs which we have them, whether the economy is good or not. They will pressurize the total revenue, which will therefore lead to the prioritization and to some extent the reduction of delivery capabilities, because the rising cost will also affect the delivery operation, whereby what we would do 3 years back with 300,000, we cannot do the same today. So therefore, it means our delivery capabilities will be affected negatively. But currently, let me indicate that we are not yet in that difficult time. We still have options to do reprioritization while the council is considering the review to ensure that we survive the coming future. Thanks.
No, thank you very much. I see there is a hand there from TPE.
No, thank you, Chair. I just also want to add to what was mentioned by the CEO earlier on. The report from CPTD is coming to the department and to the directorate where I'm located. So I just want to also commend SAICE for the way they analyze all the information that they send through to DBE, because of that, it enables all different directorates to benefit from the report. Say, for example, Branch P can benefit from the cases that are there when they look at intervention programs. From the Teacher Development Directorate, we are able to enforce participation in endorsed programs so that all teachers get PD points as one of the requirements of SACE. The other issue that I want to add on is around the function shift from the ECD practitioners from DSD to DBE. One of my responsibilities is, and one of the ACPs is to look at the great R practitioners, the amount of them in the system, the level where they are at. And we have just concluded that, and we look at, we have designed a tool where the HODs in provinces had to sign off the data that was requested from DBE. And from the analysis that was done already and addressed at the last TDCM of Tuesday, we were able to inform provinces on where they are with regards to the great R practitioners. What we also did is we took the data of the great R practitioners and we took it to SAQWA so that SAQWA can look at the qualification of these individuals and how it is aligned with the requirements in the country. And we also exposed the data to Home Affairs, where we then discover in some of the data they have practitioners on the data list that is no longer with us. So from the department side, we have done those two processes where we look at validation and we look at verification. So the verification was done by SAQWA and the validation processes was done by Home Affairs. So for that, we will be able to look at supply and demand. We were able to look at best practices, but also to do recommendations to DHET, where they had to look at the redesign of Mr. Tech, and so that we ensure that these practitioners are able to access the system. But more important for me is the issues that was raised by the CEO, the issue of conditional service, the issue of salaries, because what I picked up that this side of the river in the province, they will give for above level 6 qualification, they will give a stipend. On the other side of the river, they will give a salary in the same province. So those are the issues that we pick up, and the DG have signed the report, and the report will be released and can serve in the ELRC going forward. The last issue that I just want to raise is around the new council and the inauguration of the council on the 18th of August. A submission was on the route to the minister. The minister have approved the names of the individuals that will come from the department side, but also the two individuals that will be ministerial appointees. So I notice on my emails now that there's an email to the CEO to inform her around that one. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the responses from SAIS. I don't see any hand. I take it that we are fine with the responses. Now, I am not going to waste any time, but rather to thank you, Jay. Thank you, CEO, and the entire here. We have noted the your budget presentation for the financial year, and of course we're still going to have to wait so that we can be able to adopt it. So thank you very much. We are now closing the meeting. I know Honorable Professor can't wait, he just wants to leave. But for members then that are rushing for flights, they will then move to the to the buses. But then there is a delegation that will be led if there are any members to move around the building and be able to see the safe building. For those members that still have got time, if we do have any members that have got time. So with that as it may, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.